Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to another Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com with me, your presenter, Tim Stillman. This is a podcast that's been quite a long time in the making, and really it's going to splice two subjects that I'm really interested in together. Clearly, usually when Arsenal sign a player, I put together a podcast about that player with someone who's watched that player a lot. And so I've had a lot of time to think about who I might record a podcast about Chloe Lacasse with. And actually, that proved really, really difficult because there aren't that many people who watch the Portuguese league very, very regularly. And it's not a particularly accessible league to watch. And actually, this made me think of another thing I've been thinking over the last kind of 18 months or so, and precisely why I'm so interested in this signing, which is, you know, looking for those inefficiencies in the women's transfer market, and perhaps some of those players who do fall between the cracks a little bit. And we maybe saw it a bit with Hafayeli as well when she was at Arsenal, albeit I think her reasons for going to China were largely financial. But another, you know, a player who I think is world class, who had kind of been hidden from view in China for a few years. And it made me think about all of the, like, if I can't get someone to talk about Chloe Lacasse, how did Arsenal scout this player? How did they find her? And what role does the Women's Champions League have now in perhaps making some of these players visible? And I was racking my brains about who to talk about both of those things with, and actually found what I consider to be a very good guest for both subjects. So some of you might have seen his work on Twitter, particularly around data analytics around the women's game, but very delighted to welcome Mark Lamberts to the show. Mark, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's quite an intro, but yeah, I'm really interesting to hear also what you have to say. And I think it's definitely a topic that needs exploring a little bit more, especially in the women's game.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of before we crack into it, do you want to just introduce yourself in terms of some of the roles that you've had and have and hold around women's football? And I guess why I asked you on, really.
Yeah, so basically, I've been interested in scouting analytics for a long time, also the coaching aspect of it. But yeah, pre-pandemic, pre-COVID, I started to delve into more that side of women's football. And well, I don't know if many people know, but not a lot of clubs around the world, bar the few elite ones who have the resources, have many scouts, many analysts on their payroll. So if you are an analyst, you will be asked to do everything that is considered analysis or scouting. So it can be very broad. And I'm lucky to have some experience around Europe, in England and Germany, France, Spain as well, Italy as well, and particularly in Sweden. And I think it gives you a good perspective of how we watch the game in different countries and which countries have developed a little bit more in the financial aspect and therefore also feel they can spend a little bit more on backroom staff. So yeah, I've been a scout mainly, a recruitment analyst, which is a little bit different from a scout, but we can delve into that a little bit later. And also did a lot of opposition analysis, looking at opponents and set pieces.
And do you do this then on a kind of freelance basis, on a consultancy basis? Do you work with clubs specifically on short-term contracts? What does, because I know, again, you reference like the absolute elite clubs, like Arsenal have a couple of analysts and, you know, they will have scouts, but even a club like Arsenal, I don't think, certainly not compared to the men's game, have a very mature, developed scouting program. So how does it work for you personally?
Yeah, so I made the decision to have my own company and can be consulting. It's because most of the recruitment work is project-based. So, for example, there was an NWSL club in the United States, and they said, like, okay, we need this position. We have looked on it. We have cracked our brains on it. We can't find anything, or we found something, but we like a second opinion. So that's when I do a project on recruitment. It's mostly that, or like around the transfer market, they will contact and have you had any ideas of players that would be interested or are within our budget. If you're looking at analysis, it's more on a season base, and it's never full time. It's always part time. They would like to have one dedicated full time, but it's too expensive, and especially when budgets are tight and you're looking to avoid relegation, or, you know, if you're avoiding relegation or you're looking to avoid it, you also have to make budget for the case you will be relegated. And then, yeah, like we have seen with Reading, it's very difficult when you are relegated to keep that up. And the club has to believe in it, obviously, but also the budgets are tight. So mainly it's a part-time thing, especially when you are remote like I am most of the times, then it's part-time. There are full-time roles, but it's not, I would say that it's the exception.
Yeah. And when you do, for example, opposition analysis, like, what does that, because obviously one of the things I've always heard, don't have any experience in this type of field at all, that I've always heard, and a challenge of coaching as well as analysis and opposition analysis, is obviously you can put together and you can gather a lot of information, but then it's got to the other end, it's got to go to the players, and it's got to go to the players in a way that's digestible for them. Yeah. Like, what does that look like for you when you're opposition scouting, and you know, out of the other end of all this watching and all this data and all this information you're gathering, that it's got to come out in, you know, maybe a few bullet points?
Yeah. So obviously you make a report, a presentation, and even if I make it and would put it in my own terms, the coach wouldn't understand it, because that's not their specialty, and that's why they are coaches and not analysts. I would say that the traditional role would be that you have a head coach or manager and an assistant, and one of the assistants will be tasked with opposition analysis. Now, they are tasked with a lot more things now, so they would like to have an analyst. As analyst, your main role task is to make a few concepts clear. You have to look at the different game phases. So how does this team play in attacking phase, in the defensive phase, and the two transition phase. So the transition from defense to attack, and the transition phase from attack to defense. This is the general team stuff. Then you will look at how would they create chances? How can we make sure to block that? What are their weaknesses? How can we exploit that? Then you have your set piece stuff. So it's very important because it's direct impact. How can we score? How can we prevent? And then you have a few key players that might be very interesting to nullify and watch out for. So it becomes easier to beat an opponent. It's very important that you make a presentation with a few graphs, a few bullet points, which are understandable for everyone, especially because, you know, a team doesn't exist only of English players or Dutch players or Swedish players. No, they have different nationalities, so it must be a little bit universal, understandable for each player. And like, if I show a graph with the formation, it should be understandable for everyone, and the coach can then give the explanation of what is the game plan, how are we going to exploit it. But that's the key thing, so make it understandable and insightful for the whole group.
And how exactly did you get into this? Like, it sounds like the sort of job that a lot of, I mean, it's very specialized, but it also sounds like the sort of job a lot of people would quite like. Like, at what point do you make that leap from, you know, I think I might like to do this, I don't know, maybe I start a blog or something, or I start writing, and then, like, actually clubs come to your attention? Like, how did you kind of plot that path from I'm interested in this, I think I've got an eye for this, to actually like working with clubs?
There are a few things I've done. I've started in men's football with my local club, which is quite small. They are always between first division and second division, and I was able to explore. So I was volunteering with academy scouting, and then I developed an understanding, and they saw that I had a knack for it to do the scouting. This is how I did on field work. Well, yeah, of course, everyone had the pandemic to do the COVID period, and then I was just like a lot of people listening and out there. I was on my desk with my laptop, and I was thinking, okay, what can I do? I can watch games at home. I can look at the data. So I started to read a lot and then write a lot. And I thought tactical stuff, that's the thing that interests me. And I also want to explore a little bit more. I just want get my thoughts out there. And Twitter had at the time a great community of people writing about tactics, about scouting, and conversing with each other. And that's how I grew. And then I grew, I started posting more, writing more and more on my website, other websites, visuals. And then clubs started to think out the box. So they were, clubs, employees were also on Twitter and saw, okay, this is a very interesting insight in how something is done. I like the way that he or she is thinking. Let's have a conversation. And that conversation doesn't mean, okay, you are on board, but just have a conversation. Okay, what's happening? What would you do if you were Arsenal's recruitment team? And where will you look? And why do you think we need to get better? And where do we need to keep carrying on? And all these conversations at some point, compared with the knowledge you have acquired and the on-field experience you already had, then clubs get interested. And especially when you have that fast knowledge in the women's game, I would say if you do well and deliver good work, people, you can really make a name for yourself quite quickly.
It's a small world.
It's a small world. So, and that's also why when I am in the men's game, I'm a certain level. Clubs that will look at me, and not that well, no, but in the women's game, it's different because there are only a handful, or like 50 really invested scouts or analysts that are online, and then it goes around. But that's the main thing. I think it's also a combination of showcasing your work. What can you do? Because you can apply to roles, but they don't have an idea what you are capable of. And if they have something you can show, it's the same media, I think. If you can showcase a portfolio, what you have written, where you have written, what you have done, that's far more important than, okay, you have done a journalism degree, but show me what you have done. And this is the same with scouting, and especially for scouting, because there's no degree for scouting. There are no here in the Netherlands, there are no courses to become a scout. And there are a few out there, but no official ones.
Mm.
So that's why, it's difficult.
Yeah. And this gets me thinking of loads of things. Like you mentioned there about, certain coaches will do opposition analysis. I know at Arsenal, for example, Aaron Dantino is one of the assistant coaches. He came up in video analysis. That was his entire role at Melbourne. He actually didn't have that much coaching experience. That's what he's learned at Arsenal, but he mainly came on board because he was considered such a good analyst.
And he kind of not learnt the coaching bit after, but he, that was more what he'd been exposed to. And yeah. I think about at the, you know, at the overall level of Arsenal on the men and women's side during COVID, Edu, you know, kind of cut out a lot of on the ground scouts in favour, I think, of remote scouting, and all that, because it seems to me like quite a volatile industry as well. And like you say, there's no like qualifications attached to it. I've read Michael Calvin wrote a brilliant book about scouting in the UK, like what does a scout do? What does a scout's life look like? And the book's about 10, 15 years old now. So even some of that is probably dated, but it looks very like old school about, you know, driving up and down the motorway and all of that and watching a player. And I remember he spoke to a scout who was scouting a goalkeeper and just watched the goalkeeper the entire game, like didn't watch the ball or anything. And, you know, all these little things that you have to look for, which I guess you learn on the job, right?
Yeah, it depends. You have, and nowadays you have different scouts. So you have live scouts who are traveling, going to the games. You have video scouts who will watch a lot of video. You have data scouts, obviously, who focus on the data. And then you also have, of course, academy scouts, which is a different category, in my opinion. Goalkeeper scouts are, just like goalkeepers, are a little bit separate from the rest of the team. The scouts also, it's a whole different area of the sport, I would say. Mm-hmm. But I would say also, position specific scouts are coming up. So scouts who are only focusing on defense or attack or midfield. And you have recruitment analysts who do scouting, but also do the assessment of a profile. So which kind of profile do you need? What does that mean? What does that mean for data? What does that mean for the video? What does it mean for live scouting? But also will this individual be happy at our club? Will they coincide with our values? How is the social media used? All the complete package, it's a wage structure, okay? And all that kind of things, the complete process is also encapsulated by a recruitment analyst in combination with your head of scouting or your head of sporting activities. Of course, you learn a lot on the job. And also you will be molded by the club where you're at. You have to know the plan of play, the philosophy, the idea behind the ball. You know, Arsenal has a certain culture in football. And if they would play like a very low block all the time, people would ask about, okay, what's this? This is not the Arsenal I grew up with or what I feel like Arsenal should play like. And maybe you win things, but in the end, in the long run, people want to go to Arsenal to see exciting attacking football. That's the general consensus. Mm. So that's a culture that also needs to be kept and also be seen by scouts and by the players that might come in. And that's also why sometimes people were like, yeah, why did we get this player which might score more goals, but is she an Arsenal player? And that's a very important distinction, and that's something you will need to learn on the job.
This is something we're not going to talk about on this podcast. Specifically, that's something I'm very interested in with Russo, for example. I know a lot of people kind of saying, well, she's good, but she scored 10 goals last season. But I think she fits Jonas Eidevall's football and what he wants from a number 9 to a T. But that's not the player I'm going to discuss. The player I want to discuss with you a little bit before we go to a break is Chloe Lacasse. A player I know you've watched, I don't believe for Arsenal, but a player I know you've watched a bit. First of all, could you, because a lot of Arsenal fans, a lot of fans really won't have seen, and that's really the broad kind of parameter for this discussion. A lot of people, myself included, just haven't really seen Chloe Lacasse play. Broadly, what kind of player would you say that she is, and how do you see her fitting like Arsenal's MO?
I think she is she has a limited profile, but in that profile, she's one of the best. And why I say this is that we are constantly looking for versatile players, players who can do 3-4 positional roles. And that's not something she can do. But what she does, and that she's very strong, is she is strong on the ball. She accelerates. She's good on dribbling and carrying the ball. She's one of the best. She loves to go wide. She will start wide and then take on her opposite direct opponent and then look for the next step. And the next step would be providing a pass, which often becomes an assist or second assist, or go invert to a more ideal position and shoot herself, or go very close to the goal and shoot herself. And what I think that she does very well is that she progresses so much on the pitch that she comes in the ideal positions to shoot and also be dangerous. So yeah, if we take a data stat and metric, expected goals, she will take shots that are a high value that are most likely to be converted in a goal. So her goal contribution is very good. What I also like is that her actions will draw defenders to her, which means that she opens up space for the other attacking players. And that's something Arsenal kind of need. Obviously, there are some injuries of players that also can do that. And you need someone who can draw defenders, keep them busy, and open up space for other players to come into. And if other players need more space, and you need to deliver that too, and that's how she can benefit a national team like Canada, but also Arsenal for sure. I would say she is a skilled individual with a good technique, a strong will. She has a winner's mentality in the duels. I would say she can do better off the ball. So if you want to do a high pressing system, you need to instruct her very well. She won't recognize those little details instantly. But if you give her a good, strict plan, okay, this is how we're going to do it, and this is your task, she can be a good player. And the difficulty is, obviously, and this is maybe the next step, how do we assess someone from the Portuguese league? And this is the same question I asked a few months back with Pelova. Like, is this, the Dutch league is similar in accessibility? And that's why it's difficult to assess a player away from the national team, away from the Champions League games, or away from the top games, because those are usually filmed and put on the on platforms like Wyscout. But the regular games, the normal opposition, how does the player perform there? And that's one of the things that makes it difficult to compare a player like Lacazette compared to a player coming from WSL, because everyone can watch that game inside and out every week, and that's a difficult thing, and that's also for in terms of scouting, a very difficult thing to assess.
Yeah, and because the thing about Pelova as well is actually most of the Dutch players Arsenal have gone to another league, like they've gone to Germany, or Daniel van der Donk was in Sweden, like they've taken that step before they came to the WSL, whereas Pelova came, but she also came a bit older, so there's all of that. I think one thing you said right at the top there that really, really jumped out at me when you kind of said that actually Lacazette's profile is quite limited, but within that profile, she's really, really strong. And I've never thought of this before you said that, but actually I think that about a lot of Arsenal's attackers, like Caitlin Ford, like I described them as superpowers, right? Caitlin Ford, one-on-one, that's what you want. You want, she's good at finding ways to isolate a fullback. Frieda Mornum, I spoke to Jonas about her last season, and he said the thing about Frieda is if you step off her, she'll shoot. And if you step to her, it leaves space in behind. And he described her very simply like that. Like, that's her superpower. Like, step off and she'll shoot. Come and get her and you're leaving space. And then I look at Beth Mead. I think she's another limited profile, but world-class within that profile type player. And one of the questions I had down to ask you, but you've I think you really said it out there, is actually how Lacazette kind of how she interrelates with the other attackers that Arsenal have, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. And she can really slice a fair break in defense with her actions. So if you have a rigid defense, and obviously most of the time Arsenal will dominate the game from a playing position, and then the opponents will have a try to defend deep, have a strict line, very disciplined, and a player like us will rip the defense open, and then like a very famous commentating phrase, ask questions of a defender. And this is what she literally does. So if she drives at you, and then there is, okay, does the central defender take her on, or is it the fullback? Those questions. And if there's doubt, then you're gone. And this is something she does. And she is very good from on the break. I think she's top five in the world in how she uses her intelligence to get the maximum result out of a break, out of a counterattack. And transition, and that's she's great, and she knows also when to shoot herself or wait for her teammate, and this is something she does very well. And I would say I'm not sure if I would see her as a starter directly, but she would be like, this is also a popular phrase on the coaches, she's a finisher. So it means that she will come off the bench like around the hour mark, 60 minutes, and then the defense gets a little bit tired, a little bit sloppy, and then you have her, and that's, she's fresh, and she constantly drives the defense, and that will give more opportunities. And I think in terms of how Arsenal have played last season and compared to, you know, the likes of Chelsea and Manchester United and Manchester City, is obviously a lot of injuries, but you need to have a little bit of versatility in attack. And I think adding a profile like us will really help them going forward and find different solutions. Because, yeah, you know, if plan A or B don't work, you go over to plan C. And that's something that was needed. And I think that will really benefit them, especially with also with Russo coming in. That's a really strong addition to the overall squad.
Yeah, and just before we go to a break, that's something I think we forgot as fans, this about what Jonas wants, because there were so many injuries last season, but he's really keen on the idea, and we saw it in his first season, the front three never finished the game. It's very 60-30, 70-20. He's very into that idea of, I kind of want 90 minutes work out of you in 65 minutes, and then you're off, and someone else comes on to be that finisher. And I think that's really how Arsenal fans should be thinking about the attack, and not, who's going to start? It's going to be like, they're all going to play. Like if Arsenal have six attackers, they're all going to get on the pitch basically. Yeah. And that will happen in different combinations as we go along. But let's take a little break there. And after the break, we're going to discuss a little bit about the actual transfer market and how maybe a player like Chloe Lucas maybe fell between the cracks, maybe didn't. We'll discuss it just after the break.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Okay, and we're back, and I'm still joined by Mark Lambert's scout data analyst extraordinaire, as we kind of discuss Well, we'll go on to discuss. We've discussed a lot about kind of data and scouting and analysis and a little bit about Chloe Lacasse and how she fits in at Arsenal. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, Mark, particularly like in your role, I know I do some like behind the scenes researchy stuff, not for clubs. It's more media, but like I've just been doing a task where I've tried to watch all 32 teams in the World Cup. And when you get down the list to like Zambia and Haiti and Philippines, that becomes a very, very difficult task in its own right. So do you think, because I look at Chloe Lacasse, she's just turned 30. She's been in Iceland. She's been in Portugal. She's Canadian. So she comes from a country that doesn't have a professional league. Now, obviously, most Canadian players just go to the NWSL. That's a big part of why Canada, I think, doesn't have a professional league, because the NWSL is right there. But it could be just that she's a late developer. But it strikes me, Mark, that she's getting this move at 30. Like, has she fallen between the cracks a little bit, or is she just a late developer? And do you think there are still a lot of these inefficiencies in the women's transfer market for perhaps players who are playing in leagues that aren't very visible?
I think that if obviously we have moved. We have seen in the last 10 years, we have seen immense investment in the game. And so for the young players coming up now, it's different. Totally different. First of all, you have to look at pathways. What are the pathways out there? Which teams have academies, youth, and how does that develop into the first team? What's the chance of going into the first team? Then, and you said something interesting, because Canadian players most go into the NWSL, which is a very interesting remark, because a lot of the Canadian players, it depends if they are in the college system in the USA and if they are drafted. A lot of players aren't drafted. So what happens then? They need to find a pathway to a good league. They won't go in the NWSL, so they have to move. Obviously, Sweden has been a very good league and is a top 8 league in the world. But not everyone gets there or has the ambition to get there. Iceland is a very good opportunity. But you still have to make that move. But, and this is very interesting, so the people that recruit need to follow those leagues. And it's not easy to follow all leagues. I certainly can't follow all leagues. Not every league is available for me on data and video. But how do we get there that we know how good she played? I can't travel to Iceland every other week. I can't. And the club can't afford to have a standing scout in Iceland or two scouts. It's very difficult. So in that case, it depending on how other clubs look at Iceland, then she transfers there, and then we can get a bigger picture and a bigger idea of how she plays. And of course, national team is one of the things that we can see players perform, but also playing in a national team is about direct results. Is direct impact. That's also why you see a lot more set piece goals and a lot more penalties and in national or international tournaments, because it's about direct result. And then in a competition in domestic leagues is very different to assess. So falling through the cracks, I don't know, but it's also about the different pathways given. Right now, we see a lot more academies from professional leagues. We see different pathways. We also see there is a movement going for the professional league in Canada. There's also an idea, okay, Canada is the Olympic champion, so there's definitely something there. People look more to the nation, and that's also why the youngsters are very much more visible from Canada than 10, 15 years back. In terms of Lacasse, it's very, very odd.
She wasn't, because she went to college, right? And I believe she wasn't drafted, or maybe she was made an offer she didn't want and went to Iceland, I think.
Yeah, and and then they lose a little bit of sight. Not everyone has to resource. If this was a men's world, football world, you know, it's much more easier. You can have resources, and if you have someone in Scandinavia, they can travel to Iceland. But that's the thing in women's football. And even if she was in Portugal, and Benfica is dominating the league, doing very well, there's not much opposition yet for them going into the Champions League. And then, yeah, it's much more visible. And you see her perform against other elite squads, and then you think, okay, she can really do something. But the journey towards there, all the games she has played outside of the Champions League, it's very difficult. So it's also a little bit of a risk. Sometimes you need to go travel and see how she's doing. But it's a kind of a blind spot for the players that are between 25 and 30. We haven't seen a lot if they didn't go through the top leagues and didn't go through the leagues that are well covered on the platforms. And that's also why I think people have a lot of questions about Lacaz. Why is she going to Arsenal now? And why didn't we pick her up earlier? That's also something you hear. Why didn't other clubs look at it? And I'm not at liberty to say which clubs, but I've scouted her for other clubs. And then people would have doubts, and not so much on the sporting aspect, I would say. But I say there's also a different thing. How would she mold? How would she do well in our club? What kind of wages does she want? All these kind of things, the total package, and they weren't quite certain if she would be able to adapt, purely because they don't know what kind of culture has Iceland, what kind of culture does she have back in Canada, how would she respond? And that's also why it's a kind of a risk for a lot of clubs in that category. But yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah, and like one of the things I've become fascinated by over the last kind of 18 months or so, not just, I'll come on to again to the transfer market in a minute, but you know, when Jonas Eidevall was explaining like signing Hafaeli, for example, he talked about how, you know, he prioritized a lot, but kind of because he had to, the game she played for Brazil. Obviously, yeah. Brazil have a Swedish coach. Hafa has a Swedish agent. And so, like, I hesitate to use the word unsophisticated, but I do think that, like, it's maybe more unsophisticated than we realize, that there's a lot of, like, a lot of it's to do with connections. But also, after the Ajax game last season, Ajax, when Arsenal played Ajax in the Champions League qualifier, and Ajax held Arsenal to a 2-2 draw at home and gave them a really tough game. And we spoke to Jonas afterwards, and he was referencing data from Y-Scout about Ajax. And I was like, you know, and this isn't a criticism. I'm sure this is just the way it works. I was like, I use Y-Scout. And he was talking about how not all of Ajax's games are on there. Yeah. And he was talking about how the data was incomplete, but he was still able to build up. He only referenced Y-Scout because he said, oh, according to Y-Scout, like, Ajax have the highest PPAD in Europe or something. Sorry, defensive actions. Basically, I've forgotten the actual name of the metric, but it basically measures kind of pressing intensity.
Yeah, passes allowed per defensive action.
That's it, PAPD. Yeah. And I was like, and I didn't mention it to it, but in my head I was like, oh wow, I use Y-Scout, like, just kind of for fun almost. And so, yeah, it made me think like, wow, we got this brilliant defender, I think kind of because Jonas is friends with her national coach and her agent Swedish, and we're playing a big Champions League game and using Y-Scout. Like, is that kind of the impression you get even at the elite level, that there's still quite a way to go?
Yeah, so I would say that, in terms of Ajax and Eredivisie, it's difficult because not all games on there. Just, you know, 40% of the games are taped. So there's one game per round, and that's on Y-Scout. So that's difficult. And obviously the data is incomplete, but you can still draw some conclusions. So if they have 8 games and their PPDAs are high, yeah, sure, you can learn something from it. I think that people underestimate how much of connections is important, and in women's football even more. So say Arsenal feel very, very confident with a certain agency with the players, they will look at that agency because they have a good reference.
Or Joe Montemoro's agency was very, very. That was a very rich seam of recruitment for Arsenal when Joe Montemoro was the manager.
Yeah, those exactly those relationships. But also, say you have, for example, you ran very well between Ajax and Arsenal in certain talks or negotiations or whatever. They have a good relationship. Why not deal with them again? Because maybe their payment structure, you know, they pay everything up front or, you know, something like that and not in installments. Stuff like that is important to clubs. And I think that's why we see certain transfers going and some transfers are not going through. And I think that people also need to see the whole picture. That's very important. And also the picture of the player. And I think I'm not necessarily want to talk about Russo, but this is something that's very important for a player as well. We have to remember that this is a job for players as well. For me, it's a job for me, and mm-hmm. you're writing media, it's a job, and for players as well. And they want to be compensated correctly. They want to go for the highest thing they can achieve. And that is something that's also talked about. And obviously an agency will add to that, and a club needs to set out a plan for a player. So I'm sure other clubs were interested in Lacazette, but if Arsenal had the best option performance-wise, sporting-wise, but also financially, and also it doesn't hurt that everyone in the world knows a little bit of English nowadays, so living in England is maybe more interesting than going to Italy. I don't know, it's just all examples, but you have to look at the complete package. And everyone has Wisecout or other video providers, data providers. But in the end, it's about when you enter the stage of, okay, we are going to make an offer or we're going to start negotiating, then it's different. This is a different game. And that's not something scouts can do or analysts can do. And then it's just negotiating. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I do feel that it's a little bit more connection-wise, networking-wise in the women's game than in the men's football. But it's also because we just have a limited market in the sense that what's attainable. So that's the difficult thing. Like if you want a defensive midfielder who can play the ball long and strong with his head, yeah, you will get 20,000 players in men's football that can effectively play there. If you do that in women's football and you only want to look at elite ball carriers in midfield who can play top Champions League level, you have 8 players. And underneath that is a lot of unknown territory, and that makes it very difficult. So that's why relationships are very important with agents and stuff like that.
Yeah, because one of the other reasons I became really interested in this was last summer, at the elite level in the transfer market, from what I could see, all the big clubs were trying to buy each other's players. So yeah. Barcelona wanted Miedema and Raud, didn't get either of them. Chelsea wanted Guerreiro, didn't get her. Barcelona ended up buying Kira Walsh because they wanted a defensive midfielder, and she's one of the best ones about, and she already plays for Man City. So you have to break the world transfer record to do it. And I was looking at it and I was thinking, this means we've got a supply and demand issue. Clearly, like, we've got more big clubs now. It's not just the case anymore like it was 10, 15 years ago. If you're a good British player, you go to Arsenal. And if you're a good European player, you go to Lyon. And that's kind of about it. Whereas now, like, the marketplace is more crowded, but the supply of players isn't quite there, which is why I'm really interested in Arsenal signing someone like Chloe Lacasse, bringing in younger players like Katrin Kuhl and Gio Quiroz, who and that to me is about trying to get the players before they go to Wolfsburg or someone and you can't get them anymore. And I just wonder, in your kind of, when you were for example, scouting Chloe Lacasse, you referenced the Women's Champions League. That clearly gave her a platform. Like, without that and without the group stage, and not just like with six games against really good opposition, you mentioned how good she is on the counter-attack. I'm certain every Arsenal fan has seen that goal she scores against, was it Barca or Bayern, on the counter, and she cuts in on her left foot. And, you know, and it seems to me like, you know, the Women's Champions League is going to perhaps close some of those inefficiencies. When you scouted Chloe Lacasse, how much did you put extra emphasis on those games at all? Or like, how did you look at those games differently, or didn't you?
I didn't. And the reason is, yes, it is high opposition. This is a strong opposition. For me, it's about a series. If I look at 20 games and six of them are Champions League, for me, it's about the length of the games. How many games have you played? And that's very important. And obviously, the Champions League are outliers. Yeah. So if you look at Benfica in the league, they have to dominate. They have to win. If they don't win, it's a shame. This is a disaster. And this is also, Arsenal is a dominating team. They should, every season, they should fight for the title and should go far in the Champions League. That's the main objective, and the Cups as well. And this is Benfica too. But Benfica against Bayern Munich or Barcelona or whatever teams they're playing, they have a little bit more freedom because they are not expected to win. So they are a little bit more creative. They can take risks because if they don't win, it's not a shame. And that's why I think, as a professional capacity, I don't put too much stock in them. But obviously, the individual action are very good against a very good opposition. And it's not to say that she isn't good, because she is good. But I don't think that what happens a lot is, okay, these games are available. We look at those games. And if you look at these games, I get this image. And this is it's not the complete package. And also the data from those games is not the complete package. So if you want to fully assess her and you look at 2-3 years, what kind of part of it is Champions League games? And it gives fans an idea, it gives media an idea how she can play and that she can be very good for Arsenal and decisive. But in the series of 20 games, 30 games, how does she perform? It's far more valuable. Because you will play at Bristol City. You will play Leicester. You will play Brighton, which are of different level. But can she dominate against that opposition and be expected to score goals and deliver assists? And that's the main thing. And I think that's more important, that you can contribute. And this is also looking at Russo. People say, okay, 10 goals, but how does she contribute to the attacking actions, to actually winning a game? And that's huge. And that's good for Russo, and it's good for the cast, it's good for Belova. And that's why they are brought in. Not necessarily because they played a good game against a top opposition. It's a long run we try to assess. And for a long run, you need to perform, and not only the outliers.
Yeah, because I guess that goal she scores against Barcelona, that's not a goal she's likely to score for Arsenal against Bristol City, for example, who aren't going to have their like two defenders in their entire half on the counter-attack. Just in closing, just probably a more basic question, like in terms of where you think, because I have the impression that Lacasse has got two good feet and can play on both sides. Is there a side that you think she's better at, and do you have a sense of like whether she'd be, for example, at the moment Mead and Ford are pretty much the first choice, I think, first choice wingers who'll probably start most games, whether she'd be better as a kind of understudy support rotation option for either one?
I would always play her on the left. She has two good feet, obviously, but if she plays on the right, she will be direct in going through goal, which gives her one option. On the left, she can invert, she can play on the wing, she can be in the half space, she can provide an assist, can shoot herself, she can have a good link-up play, there are more options. And that's also why she can be valuable, because she's high in goals and assists. And I think that if you want to create more, because I think Arsenal need to create more and finish better, and allow... Okay, you need to also... She also makes others better. That's very important. And we've seen that with Blackstenius.
Yep.
She needs someone who can help her. And if that someone who draws defenders away, someone who passes the ball in the right area, the right time, the good positioning. And that's something Lacazette can do. She can make better chances for other players. And I think that she will do very well, even if she doesn't start in that regard. So yeah, I would personally play her from the left, but she can play from the right or down the middle even, but I would say her strength lies in that left wide area where she can invert and pass the ball wherever she wants it to be. And
And just a final question, actually, just came to mind. Like, we've talked about the fact she's just turned 30. And I guess when you scout a player like Lacazette, you know, like the age curve, it happens to every player at some point. Yeah. It doesn't happen to them at the same point, but it happens to every player because there are no 50-year-olds playing. How much are you asked to look at something like that? Does that figure in your thinking? Would that figure in like a report? Would you look at, say, how she is in the last 20 minutes? Like, do you build in kind of anything to do with age profile, or would you just present to the club, this is the player we're looking at?
For a player of her age, this is her peak.
Yeah.
Normally. So potential doesn't come into play. So you need to be top. Yeah, if you're in Portugal, you need to be the best player, which she arguably is, because I'm not... Yeah, there's another player.
Kika Nazareth.
I think she is more valuable because the potential is huge. But she needs to be the best player. Victoria Polovo is younger, but she was the best player in the league, for sure, 100%. If you go to those leagues and you're scouting them, you need to get the best players. Now, an age profile, you will see, okay, what can I get out of it? You know, is it a case of one season or three seasons? And that's very important. So, and how will she play? How are abilities? Are they dependent on getting older, on injuries? So if she's someone who heavily relies on her pace and the ability to direct contact with her opponent, yeah, that comes. Then age is a relevant metric to consider. If she's someone who is good on the ball and doesn't necessarily need that pace, but can distribute and become a little bit more of a creator instead of finisher, then you can see her for a longer period. Obviously, that is a very important thing, especially if you look at a player and you are going to splash some money.
Yeah.
So, and I think that we'll see more and more transfer fees now, especially after the World Cup. It's always going to be crazy overspending after a tournament, but we are now paying 400k for Joe Hart, who doesn't necessarily have a great season, but we're paying now for where the game is going. So, but then if she still has a few good years. She has a potential to fulfill. She can get a team to the next level. And then, obviously, then money is a big factor. And then you will be more easily... you will be more comfortable spending on someone who has a potential and you can help her get that potential than someone who is top and will only go down in market value. And I think that's an important thing. But how clubs work is you have a 6-month, 12-month, 18-month recruitment plan most of the times. And for the 18 months, you track talents. But, you have to perform now within 6 months and then 1 year. Yeah, you don't consider the age as important because you have to perform right now and not in 2 seasons' time.
Yeah, yeah, and it strikes me that Arsenal have got two layers of recruitment going on at the moment in terms of bringing the Catherine Calls and the Gios in, but also over the top of that, Illichstedt, Lacasse, like you say, those have got to be the best right now. Mark, that was a really fascinating discussion. I really, really enjoyed that. And I can tell because it went well over the time that I said that I would keep you for, which is always a very good KPI for a good conversation. But Mark, first of all, and sorry, I should say, where can people follow your work online?
You can follow me at Lamberts Mark on Twitter. I also run a visualizations account, She Plots FC. So if you didn't know it was me, here I am. And mainly on Twitter, you can also then find my Medium where I write about articles. And I occasionally also write Her Football Hub, which is also a great platform to read about women's football, also for writers getting started. So there you can find me.
Yeah, a really recommended follow. Followed Mark for quite a while, and the She Plots, the radars that you do, which are you know, I've learned to love visualization. I'm not a visual learner, but like getting into data, because I was writing about football and I got into the data side afterwards because I felt I had to as part of my job. So I've learned to love visualization and really, really enjoy your work, Mark. So thanks very much for that. We really, really hope that you enjoyed that episode and found it informative. We'll come back with something in a couple of weeks, probably World Cup themed. Not really expecting much transfer activity from Arsenal, certainly not during the group stages anyway. But I know several members of Arsenal's coaching staff are going to be out in Australia and New Zealand. And I believe they are going to be doing some scouting themselves. So a relevant discussion there. And maybe we'll start to see the fruits of that in August. But until then, take it easy and we will speak to you next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.